only I wish to say that seeing that this is our third meeting, we more or less are familiar with each other, so we will not do the courtesy introduction from IPID. We more or less know everybody who is here, except SAPS today. The commissioner, national commissioner, is not around and has sent three of his colleagues to be here. We welcome you to this meeting. We invited the police and IPID because we believe that the issues that we're dealing with are in a way related or linked to your work. It is CETA and the police contracts, and if these matters go back to the police, they will need IPID. And that is why, Director, we invited you to be here so that we can make sure that we keep the correct focus and link. Whatever happens up beyond this meeting, if it needs you, it should not be felt as if you are jumping into something that does not need you. We are of the same view, even before we get the fact that these things are like this. And at the end of the day, the park will stop with you. So everybody should understand that we expect you to be given the space and the cooperation to do the work that you should do if the facts point in your direction. So we are happy that you were able to make time to be with us. I've seen the presentation that you've prepared, but I would not want us to go into it because it is a broad and general presentation. I was saying to my comrades here, maybe we may need to make time so that we could just talk about everything. But today we want you to listen and take note of what is happening here. And then we'll take it up from there. The police, as I said, you know, we've had this duality all along where CETA and the police appeared, and but this time around we felt since CETA has finalized its own internal investigation, let us have CETA talk to us. We know that the police also had an investigation on their side, which according to your commitment, should have been completed by the end of May. We will engage on it, and I'm sure when we engage on it, we'll invite CETA, we'll invite IPID, because these are matters that are interrelated. We will not want to deal with them in silos. So we invited you so that you could also, you know, have a brief on the issue. Now, we have met TG, I think, on two occasions already. And our main concern was the way things have been going in IPID, in CETA. And we were quite focused as a committee on a few things. And CETA committed to us that they were engaged in a number of investigations on their own to clean house. And we, in our last meeting, agreed that once your report is out, we would want to engage. We would want you to come and brief us and say, yes, our investigation is completed. This is what it has found. And this is what we have done or are doing at two levels. One, in relation to the facts that point to individuals, your employees within CETA. And secondly, in terms of how do we build systems that ensure that these kind of things do not happen. So I think we are here today so that you could talk to us and give us a sense of of what has transpired. So I would, very, very unusual, but that's what we're going to do. We'll hand over to the CEO to talk to us, and then if there are issues of clarity that we may need, we will then engage. But if the report is clear, straight to the point, and with no gray areas, well, that will be it for the day. But we were completely in your hands. Yes, CEO.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning, Honorable Members. Chairperson, I'm actually led by the Chairperson of the Board's Audit Committee, Mr. Graham Victor, on my left here, who represents the Chairperson of the Board and the rest of the Board. We've submitted four documents to yourselves, one of which came only this morning, which is a presentation that has been handed over, that is written Bowman on top of it. The other three documents were submitted over the weekend. One is a cover letter which responds directly to the questions that were in the invitation. Then the second one is a report back on the ACM or the SCM audit of forensic investigation by Bowman. Then the other one is the report back on the audit on our human capital management unit by Bowman. And then the last one is the report back from Funduti, which was doing SCM audit for our provincial operations. And so perhaps just to start, we maybe just go through the cover letter, because there were specific questions that were asked there. And one, I'll just summarize what the questions were. There was a question about the 4.3 million rand that was spent or identified in respect of, and then the question was to provide detail on what was that all about. And we provide that detail there in the cover letter. It was a specific system called that is used in SAPS forensics, that is provided by a company called Labway. And we were asked or tasked by SAPS to go into contract with this company. That's point 1.3 on the cover letter there. And they've quoted 4.3 million for 25 months, starting from April 2017 to March 2019. And the award was eventually made for 11 months, starting from May 2018 to 2019 for just over 2 million. And they were supposed to provide third line support, while we provided first line and second line support. And the money spent there, expense spent, that is now on page 12, two, was 659,000 or so in 17-18, and then 80,000 rand in 18-19. For specific items that are listed there. The second question that was asked was the legal firms that were used, or specifically where legal firms were used to augment internal legal department services, details of areas where such consultants were used and which consultants those were. That's section two there, when we provided that detail. So I think it's worth noting that we are talking about a lot of money they spent over the period starting from early 2016, and released the amount of money. And
I'm sure we all have this copy, the one that is referring is talking to.
Okay.
Just a minute. Ah, okay, this one. The same thing. Oh, okay. It's this one. Comrade Kuno. This one. Hey, Kuno. Talk to you. I think this one. You have this one? Yeah. Okay. No, that's fine. I was just saying, because, you see, they are presenting, and then the next thing you will not have had or even know where the information is. Well, I wanted to make sure that we are all on the same page. If you have this one, it is the first page, and I think it's now on the second page.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, continue.
We detailed the legal terms that were used, the amount of money that was spent, and then what has been the outcome of that work, showing that in the supply chain area, we dealt with 38 cases after 21 million rand, 13 dismissals, 22 resignations, and then 3 final warnings. We initiated specific investigations this financial year, this year, on FDA, resulting in 2 resignations and 4 disciplinary hearings that are ongoing. I must state that with respect to the Bauman investigations, as on the FDA investigations, there is quite a extensive litigation that is ongoing right now, and we'll come back to that just now. A litigation with a, among other things, intention to review all the contracts that certainly CETA and with the concern of SEPS, some of the SEPS contracts that we both have entered into with FDA and related companies. We then saw the spend on the ACM audit. 3 dismissals, 6 separations, and 1 final written warning, 11 million rand. And then the other supply chain, which is in the provinces, Bafunduzi, which is 8 million, 4 dismissals, 2 resignations, 2 disciplinary hearings that were in progress as of the writing of this document, 3 charges that were drafted but not yet served, and 1 investigation that had not yet been finalized, but we'll take care of that. We have also noted that a number of these occurrences happen at the tail end of a breakdown of processes, supply chain processes, starting with late, for example, triggers for processing of requests, resulting sometimes in unnecessary agency, resulting in unnecessary renewals of the status quo. So we have put together we call it a loss control committee. We mentioned it a couple of sessions ago, but it's a management disciplinary tool that allows us to employ disciplinary processes consistently across the organization on matters related to flouting of our supply chain policies. Of the 40 cases, we've dealt with already 40 cases involving 25 employees through that structure. And then we provide some statistics of what the status quo is. We do have information, just information about individual cases. Then on the last page, page 4, we note that the committee requested the report back on the ROFIN investigations, or more generally, probably investigations on FDA. And I'd like to note that, and we made a request, a formal request, that we be provided with a closed session so that we can provide the committee with the full detail. The reason being that we are in active litigation. There was a court case, for example, last week on the 20th of August, and the matters have been postponed indefinitely to allow the parties to submit fully their documents. And the judge has acknowledged the gravity of information, of the gravity of the situation in front of her, and has noted that they may ask that the matters be held by the full bench of the High Court because of the gravity of the issues there. On our side, with SEPS, our request is, as I said, review, the set of review applications to set aside the contracts that we have entered into. With the result, among other things, is that we have enough information to lay claim on some of the monies that we have paid against what we have now identified as the purported work that was done. Moving forward, Chair, we do have this presentation here, which is a summary, though, and would like to go through it just to give a sense to the committee of what these investigations have unraveled. I'd like to focus mostly on what I did say about the CETA systems that enabled these things to happen. The committee requested that it wants to see the results from Bauman, so we have put it as a Bauman presentation. It was presented to the Board of CETA on the 31st of July, and because of the gravity of some of the things that we uncovered that go beyond procurement and go beyond CETA, the board resolved that it's important that our minister be briefed directly, and then we can take the cue from the minister about how we move forward. The minister has been traveling, and I was only able to get a session with him yesterday, last night, and provided him with a full briefing. And the DG is here to express the minister's wishes or suggestions on how to move forward. So we have said that it is a document that reflects the feedback that Bauman gave to the CETA board, but has been updated after my meeting with the minister. Chairperson. Pardon me? Let's go into it. Thank you. So if you can go into that presentation, it does cover, at least on point two, the progress feedback on the SCM investigations, FDA, ROFIN, FDA, FPS, that is the firearms permit system, and then ISS, that is another FDA-related company that is on the IBM or the IBM i2 or VAMIS system for investigations. Repeat the disciplinary matters that we have undertaken, and also list the criminal matters that we have raised at SEPS and also DPCI against CETA employees. On page 5 of the presentation, I will just note the scope of the investigation on SCM. At the point when we started this investigation, there were 84 employees in our SCM division. The scope for the investigation was 83, with the last person being the executive in charge of that, and that was the executive running the investigation. So it was a full scope investigation. The Bauman has provided us with the report that I'll go through later on. And the other documents that we've been provided that allow us then to improve our controls and do further work internally. So I'll come to the internal SCM results a little bit later. Just focus on the FDA investigation. That's all. Going on page 6, specifically on Rofin, the committee will recall that the Rofin matter relates to the generally referred to the lights that are used at the countries. We received a tasking to provide maintenance on those lights, and at some point it was quite specific that we go to FDA. However, there was certain actions within CITA itself. If the members will recall that this whole process started quite a long time ago, where CITA had a basket of IT ICT goods that it maintained on behalf of SAPS, as it maintains on behalf of other customers. And CITA would then, on the basis of it not having the capacity to do the work, would go into the market to source service providers to provide those maintenance and support services. Because of the scope, geographic scope of SAPS, we specifically then require, would accept that there's unlikely to be one company that had the full geographic and technical scope to do the work. So we'd accept consortia to respond. Then we'd also request that the consortia should demonstrate that they have the full geographic footprint in order to serve SAPS adequately. So the CITA contracts have numbers. So the first number, for example, was a 433 number, and that was won by Kijima. And then in 2009, that was refreshed under 769 number, and that was won by a consortium called Kauleza, and a number of companies in it. In the basket of items that we had to maintain, there were this lights in them. We know that at some point, those lights were classified as non-ICT equipment. So perhaps even at that point, we ought to have then said, no, but these are not ICT equipment. They should come out of this basket. But we never did. We accepted for them to be maintained. We also recall from the committee that the actual purchase of the lights was done by SAPS, so CITA was then supposed to just do maintenance. However, the maintenance of those lights, there was purportedly an exclusive maintainer and distributor of those lights into the country, this company being FDA. Even though the supplier therefore of the basket of goods of maintenance was a consortium, the actual maintainer of this particular goods was then FDA because of the exclusivity that they have. We have since uncovered, I think we have reported to the committee, that the market was not tested. The committee asked us this thing upfront last year, whether do we ever test the market for other suppliers of maintenance services, not tested the market. That the sole supplier status, we have accepted that there is enough reason to believe that the documents that were used to accept FDA as a sole supplier for maintenance services, we have enough reason to suspect they are bona fides. And we found this information on the computing devices of our staff members. We then noted during the investigation again that the scope of the original contract that was under Kauleza then all of a sudden increased because there was then a request to provide more maintenance on additional so-called roughing goods. But those were not roughing goods. They were cameras, for example, the Nikon cameras. We call them Sferon items and Fumintens. But they came in. They were included under a roughing goods and therefore the FDA exclusivity for maintenance. And the scope change increase was estimated now, or 662% scope increase on an existing contract. But then, of course, the existing contract has a limit on spend. So That then created a business case to take out the Rofin out of the basket of goods with a business case for us to then contract directly with FDA. Eventually, that was done under a contract that was signed in 2014 for 5 years, and that cost 583 million rand. That was direct. We found that the processes of the treasury were not proper, or certainly the approvals from treasury that were required by the board were not sought and given, and certainly there was no reporting thereafter on the deviations, on the fact that this thing was a deviation from normal tenders. We have found quite extensive collaboration during and after the tender process in contracting between some of our staff members and some of the employees of FDA, things that ought not to have happened. And we believe that those indicate undue influence between the parties. We have further done extensive work on now the work that then was supposed to have been done under this maintenance contract. And we have reason to believe that we have significant claims that we can make against FDA for the work that they purport to have done that we doubt. Well, we have our own issues around that. But that is part of the court case, Chairperson. The claims that we have both on the contract itself and on the money spent, particularly money spent on the purported work that they have done, is part of the active litigation that we have against them. On page 7, this is just a relisting of the amounts that were spent or contracted up to now on both the Rofin and then the FPS systems. Must just state that, Chairperson, on an update now, but we probably have given this update before. In February, we wrote to FDA and told them our intention to terminate the Rofin agreement, which we have executed. So as far as we're concerned as CETA, we have terminated that agreement with them. And they went to court and challenged us on that. And again, that is part of the litigation and counter-litigation between ourselves and them. But as far as we're concerned, these are we don't have any obligations to them on that. Then on page 8, we talk about the firearms permit system, noting that the original appointment was between CETA acted as a procurement agent on behalf of SEPS, and SEPS was a contracting agent in around 2003, and the winner was Waymark, with FDA being in the background. It has now become clear that this contract was noted as irregular in the intervening years. Or let me just be specific, just to remind the committee that we, in 2016, we were then tasked by SEPS to take over this contract, where FDA provides maintenance support on the firearm permit system. But in the preceding years, the 13 years prior to that, certainly there was a determination in 2015 that there was the expenditure under this contract was irregular somewhat. We found that some of our members of staff knew about this, but they never disclosed to any of the structures of CETA that, in fact, there were problems with this contract at SAPS. So when we responded to that tasking, BISAPS went to Treasury and we were allowed to contract with them with FDA. We did not take that into consideration. And had we taken that into consideration, probably the decisions would have been different. we did contact with FDA directly. That is for 2016 and 2017. And then there was a request for to renew that contract. That was for 20 million. There was a request to renew that contract. They quoted us 69 million. And as the committee is aware, we made an award, but we never contracted for the 3 years, starting from 2017. And we have paid once, or probably twice, but we have not paid since January of this calendar year. And we are in litigation with FDA on, again, not only the issue of payment, but also the various aspects of us contracting with them. In a sense, we are, this is part of our review application against contracting with them. And we have looked at the work that they have done. At the last point there, it talks about severe underutilization of the system, and we want to emphasize severe there. And we have, again, we're laying claims against the money that have been spent over the years. We have looked at the system quite extensively, the software itself, and the functionality that is there. And we're quite clear that over the period, the system itself, certainly the maintenance of that system, we could have tested the market better. We're quite happy to announce that since then, we have received a tasking from SAPS to build a new system in a manner that ensures that the intellectual property stays with the state forever. And we, a team has been set up between CETA and SAPS, and work has begun in building a new system there. We have further uncovered some links, direct links between FDA and related companies and some former senior, quite senior personnel within CETA, and that is part of also an ongoing investigation. We have looked at essentially a modus operandi, because we sometimes see, we have noted that, for example, in 2003, the SEPs or ourselves would acquire perpetual licenses. These are perpetual rights to use of the systems, and then pay for maintenance and support. And we know the benchmark for maintenance support on an acquisition cost at most 20%. But can range between 10 to 15% on average. And we've looked at the total maintenance that we've paid there, and that comes to 121%. That's number one. Number two is that we have also noted that sometimes they will have perpetual licenses, and all of a sudden we go and recontract, and we contract now on annual licenses, meaning that the entire your benefit of the perpetual license disappears. So you pay now for both maintenance and support and annual licenses. And we found the modus operandi. We understand how that happens there. And again, that's part of our review application, because we don't believe that we ought to have, we don't believe that our perpetual licenses should have disappeared the way that they did. The systems are on. The committee will recall that they were turned on in early April, and we turned them back on and shut out FDA out of our entire system physically and otherwise. And CETA is taking the responsibility to keep the systems on. And we are operating those systems on the basis, again, of a claim that we have, and we have put it to the courts that, in fact, our perpetual license, our perpetual right to use never expired. Since 2003, and that we have a right to use our software as a state currently, and that we don't need the maintenance and support of FDA. Going to page 9, we have also uncovered further issues around our personnel. Specifically, we found that our technical manager, who is in charge of signing off on the work that FDA purports to be doing in terms of support and maintenance on the system. His son-in-law works for FDA on exactly the same system. So it has been easy for them to, I mean, so and that has never, that was never disclosed to the organization. As a result of that, we have now found, and has been confirmed by the same technical manager, that in fact, and by people who are around the system, that much as we have contracted and paid for 10, average 12 people to provide maintenance support on the system, only two actually have ever been seen there. But we've been signing on these 12 all of these years. So again, that is part of the litigation that we have. I'll keep repeating this thing, Chairperson, just in case. We, as you mentioned earlier, there were things that ought to have been provided to CETA during our response to the tasking by SAPS that were never disclosed to us. I've just talked now about the issue about the perpetual licenses, and then the sudden change from perpetual license to annual licenses. The previous deviations were not reported to NT, and the terms and conditions of approval of extension were not met. Specifically, the National Treasury required us to make sure that we test the market and make sure that even if we go direct for that year, we still are able to prove that we have value for money. We have now since looked in the, I mean, during the specific investigation of FDA, we have gone into the detail, looked at the system, looked at the functionality, looked at the technology, looked at how much has been added into that system over the years, and we believe that if we had gone out into the market and assessed the what was provided on the basis of value for money, we would not have contracted for that amount of money. And again, that's part of our litigation as well, because we believe that there was a fair amount of misrepresentation to us on what the system was all about. Moving forward, on page 10, a little bit of introspection there as well. We looked at, after the systems were shut down, I then commissioned a full technical forensic analysis, particularly of the FPS system, because that was built bottom-up. And we found that both CETA personnel were tasked with looking after the technical environment, SEPS being the user of there. And so I'll just maybe just focus on CETA, that there was almost, there was very, very limited knowledge of how the system was built, how it was configured, where the servers were, when our people went there, the people that were doing the forensic for us went there to look at the server environment. They couldn't find them because nobody knew where these things were sitting. Only the FDA people knew anything about these things. So we've identified what we call a dangerous and unhealthy reliance, and I would say complete reliance on FDA people on the entire thing, which says that, I mean, which talks to the it's not about outsourcing, it's about the how much of our duty we would have then transferred to somebody else, and therefore one can raise a question about what can we say about accountability if we have move so much responsibility away from us such that we don't even know where the servers are sitting. But we found them. We know exactly how they're sitting, where they are. We have looked at the documentation that was provided. These are engineering systems there. They were built specifically for the state, so the documentation should be sitting with us. We do have legal claims about copyrights, I think, that we kind of hinted here because of the very specific reason that these things were built specifically for the state. But the documents are not available. And the later on, when we found them, they're completely outdated and almost not usable by anybody else. So, again, pointing to the reliance on FDA. The fourth bullet point is a summary, Chairperson, and I'll just put it that way, of potential issues that we found on data sitting between the front end and the back end system with a number of implications. And then the last bullet point is potential issues again on the transaction logs, audit trail, and general identity and access management into the system. But we do note that on the next page 11, third bullet point on identity and access management into the system, that we found that the FDA personnel had super user rights, and they could do anything and everything about the system. And nobody else within the state environment had the same kind of rights that they had. We found extensive use of what we call generic transactional codes, which then allow for transactions to be done on data without identifying what those transactions are. Again, this has very grave implications about that, and those are things that we had to brief the minister about, Chairperson. And then most certainly there's very limited documentation about the actual maintenance that was done on this information there. So our claim is based again on the fact that, in fact, we, based on what we found, the software, the hardware, documentation, we believe that we paid, that we have a claim against the money that we paid against purported maintenance. We found issues around data management, internal systems control, technical system control, poor user management, and the fact that this is an extremely, extremely old system that was never kept. That we were saying that it's a very immature system for its lifespan. From 2003 to now, that's over 15 years. For each state, it's extremely, extremely immature. Then moving to page 12, now about the VAMS system. We just show the data that we probably have provided before, but we probably haven't provided this level of detail about how much was spent over the years under various extensions. It's $567 million. So, President, I think we've come here before and said we on only the three things that we have, we can show that we have spent more than R1 billion on only the three systems. This number shows that, and this is just covering our small periods where CTA is directly involved, because FPS, remember, covers a period, even the 13 years is not included in that. And so if you look at the R900 million or R800 million of ROFIN, then you look at the R567 million here and the R89 million on FPS, minus the 13 years on FPS, we are well over R1 billion, and we can show that. And there's other things, of course, that have been bought from FDA and related companies. On the VAMS, it's been known for many, many years that there are alternative suppliers out there. We did a feasibility study last year. We found at least one alternative supplier. We have since gone into the market on a request for information, and we have found more suppliers of similar functionality. So we ought not to have accepted this system for all of this time without testing the market and testing value for money over there. So that is what we've seen. We doubt that we do have claims, again, monetary claims on the system, on value for money. Every time the extensions came, the monies, we have looked at the monies there, and we do understand now the much, much better the cost structures, and we believe that we believe that we have legitimate claims there. Previous to that, there was no transparency in the costing, but we have much better information now. There's no transparency in the number of licenses that were purchased, maintained, and supported. And in terms of also the contracting model, the underlying technology comes from IBM for this system here. For a number of years, we have been contracting with IBM directly. Even during the currency of this extension here, directly. And then we can use the market for, open market for our services. And we ought to have included the software here in that basket of goods that we get from IBM at a minimum. And on that basis, we now know how much then, what premium we paid by not using the normal framework agreement that we have are with this OEM. There were gaps in the services being rendered without contract. Some of the actions were not implemented coming out of adjudication committees. We understand now the architecture, much better the architecture of the system. There's an IBM core, which is under license, and then there is certain development that was very, very specific to SAPS, because this system integrates with a very, very specific other systems within SAPS. And like other things, that integration was built on SAPS-specific requirements. And there's claim, the legal claim that we have put, that we have, that when that happens, then there's issues around where the copyright stays as well. Certainly, in terms of advisory services, that IP should have been retained by the state. And moving forward, we will ensure that even if the core functionality is a licensed functionality, the intellectual property for integrating with other subsystems stays with the state forever. This also relates to other systems as well, because they integrate quite a lot with each other. We are tasked with ensuring that there is what you call minimum interoperability standards established. That minimizes complexity and also minimizes design complexity and also operational complexity. And this was not done. Things could have been much better had we done that in general. Then on page 14, we show the results of all of these investigations there. Some of them are quite interlinked as well. So some of the people that we show under SCM, if you recall that we started with the SCM investigation. The intention was never to look at sub-specific things. We're just investigating our own SCM things. And then that started leading into specific areas of our operations. And so somebody who is caught in the SCM net actually was doing most of that work, was facilitating, or what is involved, most of that work involves the FDA, so to speak. So the numbers may look small there, but they are already captured. Some of it is captured under the SCM investigation. The numbers under FDA are the new numbers of some of our managers and also technical personnel. So, President, on page 15, we show, and this is part of the public record, the names of people who either our employees, former employees, 1 to 6, against whom we have submitted criminal cases. And then we'll note that we have also submitted one against the 2 FDA people as well. That's summary, Chair, of the investigations that we have done with FDA. The actual documentation is quite extensive. It's quite big. As you said, it's being used primarily by us for litigation. And it's my understanding in my briefing when I was with the minister yesterday that after he does his work, he's said that he will lead the next briefing session to SCOPA. Just to take SCOPA through the rest of the things that are outside of CETA as well. The other two documents then deal with the older investigations, some of them are newer. The full SCM investigation, the older SACM, or the 2 SCM investigations, and then the first SCM investigation that started that was authorized by the Audit Committee in January of 2016 and started in and around March. Mr. Chairperson, if you want me to go through those.
Help me, which are these documents?
Okay, so this is the
yeah, all right.
Yeah. So there's a cover letter, and then the first section there deals with the SEM investigation. Maybe I just could go through the structure of that report. You can see that it's from February 2017 to June 2018, as we had mentioned to the committee. And on page 4 of that, we show the scope of services and the mandate, and then the approach that was used for different phases. And then the page 10, the limitations of the investigation. So it's not an audit. It was a forensic investigation. And then the next page, from page 11, then it's a summary of the outcomes. Again, we repeat the criminal matters that was raised. And then the other internal page, that's page 12, other internal matters, the dismissals and the resignations and the written warnings and some of the pending things, which have subsequently been completed. Then 5.4, we have sent to National Treasury a request for some of those companies that are listed there to be restricted in the formal sense. I don't recall us receiving yet a response there. I must say, for example, one of those companies, 5414, just to give a sense of what was happening there, the owner of that company was an employee of CEDA. And they were tasked with receiving requests for purchases and going into the market to source quotations. So that was the person's job. But the person had a company, that 5414. So they would receive, and this happened for many, many years, They would receive the request from department. They would go into the market, and then when the quotations go back to the department, that company would then be listed as one of the three quoting companies. Invariably, that would be the lowest, that would have the lowest prices, because the person would then see the other prices first. And when we uncovered it was a whole pile of invoices and quotations that the person had processed for departments. And many, many departments bought from that company. That's one of the reasons why we have submitted them for restrictions. Annex A goes into the types of weaknesses and controls that they've uncovered. And we can always answer over a period of time what we are doing to tighten controls in that respect. There, a lot of it in the supply chain environment. It starts with what was traditionally very lax management of declarations of interest, and then which resulted then in almost limited or non-existent processing of those declarations, because then people felt that all we had to do was declare, nobody would check the declarations, and then the declaration would be incomplete. So some people would actually declare their companies that were doing business with CEDA directly under our notice there. So we've tightened that. And so a lot of times when you see a failure to declare, it is not just an administrative oversight on the staff member. It's because we then find that the undeclared companies were quite active doing business with the state on CEDA premises during office hours using our equipment as well. In certain cases where I just wanted to emphasize that the issue about conflict of declarations of interest and then identifying conflict is just not an administrative matter. It was an enabler for the things that we uncovered there. Annex B then details the as requested by the committee, the individual cases, you'll see in a lot of cases there were people receiving monies, and you'll find documents accepting of people thanking suppliers for this and that on our computers. And the suppliers that they would be interacting with on the normal course of business. You also see that a number of people also left before, during some of the investigations. The next step is ACM. The committee will recall that we started with ACM I went to the audit committee and asked for authorization to conduct this investigation in January through our EXCO. And that was given to us, and then we initiated a process in February. And the reason being that the whole system around personnel was being manipulated. So if you cannot get your IR system right, then you can find somebody, you can find problems, but people will forever stay in the system because their issues don't get processed. And in that respect, then even SIU findings were not being dealt with because of the rather compromised IR function. So that's one of the reasons why we started there. And we have now list also both the internal control issues and also the individual cases. Individual cases on Annex B that are fairly summarized on page 22. Then the last one, Chair, the last tab is the report from Funduti, which looked at all our provinces focusing on SCM. And that's the last tab there. And many findings in the KZN area, in the Western Cape area as well. Both of those reflecting the scope of operation of our provinces. Those are represent the two biggest provincial operations, with KZN being having fully outsourced services to CETA. And with a number of pointers, again, to the private sector as well. There's been a number of, on page, the cover page and then page one, it lists the numbers of, the first page lists the numbers, shows the numbers of some of the people that that have left under either investigations or were dismissed, both in KZN and Western Cape. And then the next page shows the rest of the other colleagues.
This one, the very... Yeah,
that's the last one.
The end, yeah, the last two pages.
There's a typo there. Says the second paragraph of apology. It says, during the period February 2015 to June 2015, that should be 2017. Northwest, KZN. And we there are a couple of other things that are just disciplinary hearings that are outstanding. And then the other things will then, the other two items, matters, we will handle them ourselves.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Now, thank you very much. We'll start with you, Comrade Tim, briefly, and then Comrade Kuno, and Comrade Shilwane, and yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I do apologize for being so late this morning. The weather is crazy, and I'm quite sure that Theresa May came past us. Whole lot of black cars and blue lights. I don't know if Theresa May, the Prime Minister, is here today or in Pretoria. Anyway, Chair, I'm very glad that finally the CEO is speaking the same language as us, because this is what we told you last year. And I'm glad that you've now presented a report which has realized everything that we were saying. Would you agree that this is definitive proof that CETA was captured. Remember, we do a back and forth here. Do you agree? That CETA has been captured.
Yes.
Okay. So it's glad to know it's not just the Guptas. Yeah. Not just the Guptas who are capturing, and I think South Africa needs to take note. There are lots of other capturers out there, very serious players that sometimes make the Guptas look silly. Anyway, I note that you have look, and from what I've seen here, you've done a thorough job. But what is clear is that CETA suffered a lack of capacity over a period of time, which enabled them to resist the advances of these capturers. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. And you have now engaged in a fairly thorough investigation of CETA and have seen to, you know, just on the Bowman side, it's 54 people that have been removed or taken action against. Well, in fact, you are 53. What are you doing to rebuild that capacity? Because I remember when I was back in the investigations field, the one day I helped a company, we started with one person and then by dominoes, we cleaned out the entire IT department in a day because they were all involved in something. And just by dominoes, they started falling. At the end of the day, the manager said, please leave me with someone to run the department. But I'm very, very concerned about what are you doing, before we get into some specifics, what are you doing to rebuild capacity to stop this from happening again?
So we're doing it for bottom up. So one of the things that was there was the system stayed the same for all of these years, meaning the people, the processes, the culture, the equipment stayed the same. So, and then the market also stayed the same. Market participants stayed the same. The problem with that is that we then don't get the benefits of changes in technology. Costs going down, getting more value for money. So it may seem a small thing, but it's a very, very significant thing. We have an average, we have a retirement age. We never used to enforce that. So we now enforce it. When you get to 60, we retire you. And then what we do is then we build capacity from the bottom. So it may, again, it seems like it's a long process and fairly, I think, dangerous process to get the skills right. But we have increased our internship program quite a lot. We're increasing our program of recruits with the newer skills quite a lot. But we are supporting this thing with modernization programs. So, for example, one of the areas that is very, very difficult, if you are not aware, it can stay with you for a long time, is the hosting environment with the old mainframes, with the those platform, what is this thing? For example, your COBOLs and so on and so forth sitting there. So we're modernizing our hosting environment. We're using cloud computing to do so. And the people, the skill sets required to be able to implement cloud computing are the newer skill sets. So that allows us then to build with the newer skills.
So are you following the Treasury model, the Trevor Manuel Treasury model, where he brings in young, fresh recruits and says to them, you're going to work here for 20, 30 years and build up a culture of excellence? In
Absolutely.
That's what you're working on. Okay, well, that's encouraging. Do you feel that you'll then be well-placed to advise departments, as is through your job, on IT matters?
Absolutely.
Within a very short period of time?
Absolutely. So we also change our business model as well. Our business model, we are moving it. We're saying procurement, we are professionalizing it so that it's about what you do with suppliers, or let's say what you do with demand management. It is not just about taking a request and then processing out into acquisition. It's actually looking at the entire operational environment, operating environment within the state, looking at the underlying demand.
Okay.
And so we're going the consulting route. Yeah.
Are you still working with SAPS?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I would like you to pass them some advice on to them, if you wouldn't mind. I see from your list of criminal charges laid that Mr. Keating and Mr. Lamprecht are included at the bottom. Is this a definitive list, just by the way?
No.
Not. Okay, because I see it's different from the one in this report. Would you like to please just advise the SAPS that they shouldn't be signing another massive contract with Mr. Keating to supply DNA kits? Because I have information that they're just entering into a massive contract to say to supply DNA testing kits. I know that's not exactly your sphere, but maybe you want to pass a little word to the commission on and say maybe it's not the right way to go after you found Keating responsible for all of this. Okay. And iPad are here, so maybe iPad can take note. Because I suspect something similar is going down. Mr. McBride is saying he doesn't know. Okay. Let's just dig into the... Okay, I think what I want to get into is consequence here now, because you've given us a long list of people that have been... the 54-odd people and then the 8 or so from the other firm that have been liable for sanction. Can we look at this SAPS list quickly in the blue page Bowman's report? A lot of these matters were reported about a year ago. Are you able to give us any, and we thank you for the list, but a year later, Andrandre matter, that's a year. Vuyi is 11 months. Wolf is a year. Brooke Siabi is about 12 months. Grimsel is about, what's that, about 11 months, 10 months. Madamba is 10 months. Okay. I see Keating and you just nailed them down. Or Keating, in fact, corruption from May 2017. Can you give us any update? Are you working with the SAPS on those matters? Or have you just reported them and feel that discharge is your responsibility?
Yes, the latter. We do the latter. We just report them and then the non-government.
Okay. Can I suggest to you that is not the end of your responsibility? Because we've seen in South Africa that our laws work, but our enforcement doesn't. And can I suggest to you that it is very much part of your responsibility to be assigned an investigating officer and to follow up with that investigating officer a year later and say, what is the progress? What is happening with this matter? Do you need some help with the docket? Because I've worked with officers in the Commercial Crimes Unit who try to make an Excel spreadsheet with a pencil and a ruler, and I'm not joking. Never laptop. Sometimes these officers need assistance. I'm really not joking.
No problem.
You cannot just say, right off our hands. I would share with your indulgence that we request a update report in a couple of months on these matters, that we get, you know, obviously not the definitive details as to, but we want to know that something's happening, because otherwise it's like everything else in this country. Okay, now then, the last thing I wanted to just touch on, Chair, you've given us a long list in Annex B of all the people who have been dismissed and resigned and whatnot. I'm sure the committee would be very interested to know about financial recovery. So you haven't given us a report of that at all. So it's quite a long list. It starts with Energy B, starts on page 19 of the Bowman's report, this one. And it goes through Andrandre Wolf. So if we look at these people, they were all dismissed mainly last year. What action, if any, has been taken to investigate whether or not they can be pursued financially on those lists? And obviously you would need to supply us with the details, but can you give us an overall impression?
Well,
and just added to that, and I'm including people who've resigned, and then I'm sure the committee would love to know what is a mutual separation agreement as opposed to a resignation, an accepted resignation. Is that an answer saying a settlement? And then if it is a settlement, how much you say to those people and give us reasons why. So just some clarity on that, thanks.
Okay. No, we have not started the process of determining recovery on our employees. But that's something that we'll definitely take take moving forward.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you there because that really concerns me. You show us 919 million rands worth was spent with FDA, Brofen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, if you look at the VAMIS, I'm pronouncing that correctly, this is exactly what I was pointing out to you last year, is that here's a nice shiny box. A year later, I'll say, here's another shiny box just with a new cover. Pay me another 20 million, and so we carry on. You put that out to us. But it hasn't even, until I asked you that question, you haven't even thought about where am I going to get this money back from, except for Keating.
Yeah.
There are a lot of other people at play here.
So
why aren't we, this is part of the problem with our South African state, is that we're not going and grabbing people's houses and their cars and their bank accounts and nailing them, running them out of business, leaving people penniless. So you didn't consider that until I asked you that question. So why not? Why not?
I think it's not for not intending to do it. The focus is because they are interlinked. For example, let me talk about the other gentleman that we talked about who has facilitated mitigating issues. Now, we have a legitimate claim against him in his personal capacity, but this case is intricately linked to the claims against mitigating. So our view is that let's go and get the. It's also kind of a lot of work right now, but I'll take it. We have been focusing on claims against the FDA companies, and we have not put the focus on claims against our employees, and we ought to have done that.
I just think you've got to do that, because we have to start that culture somewhere.
Okay.
We have to start a culture where, for instance, if you owe SARS R1 billion, that you just walk around with impunity. You know, back in the day, and when I say the day, I mean under a strong Treasury Department, strong SARS, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, those people would be arrested and all their stuff would be taken. You know? And the mutual separation agreement, what is that?
The mutual separation is not a settlement, as in we're paying people off. What it does is it just says that we are not continuing with the disciplinary hearing. And we pay you for what we owe you, and generally probably for the month that you have that you are in during the hearings, and we acknowledge that we have not found you guilty or we didn't complete the disciplinary hearing with you, and it's generally based on an ask that is made of me. The chairperson of the disciplinary hearing would come and say, look, this case is probably going to take 3, 4, 5 months. You are probably going to win it. It is probably going to cost you so much with all the delays that are there in it. It's probably not value for money for you to continue doing it, to continue with the hearing. We don't do it if in the charge sheet there is corruption or fraud. That one we pursue. If it's a question of misconduct within the organization, that's the only time that we sign that thing off.
All right. Then just final question. Can you provide us with the full list of criminal prosecutions? The full list of charges. I'm assuming Barney Fenter's in there somewhere. Is he? Okay.
Yeah, it's because
he's not on your list.
Yeah, because we've been asked by IP2, by the DPCI.
Not to list it at all?
No, for them to handle it separately.
No, that's fine. But the point is, I think this committee needs a full list, not an abbreviated list of everybody that you're sent. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Comrade Kuno?
Thank you, Chairperson. At first, I didn't understand why are you allowing him to present, but I think you did a good thing. Because I think we understand it more, as opposed to when you are reading it alone. And that's where I wanted to start. The second point I wanted to make was that I'm really disappointed that SAPS is not here. Because when they come here, it will be their word against our word, you know. And did you hear that?
There are three officers. The national commissioner is committed elsewhere. He has sent three officers for here.
So what day?
Yeah, what day? Yes.
Good. So we can talk to you. Because I wanted to base... can I start by saying my understanding as a member of parliament is that CETA's job is to consolidate and coordinate states' information technology resources in order to achieve cost savings through scales, increased delivery capabilities, and enhance You understand that? You understand that there's a public works as a department. You want something, you want a school, but you can't build it yourself as Department of Education. You've got to go through to public works for you to build that. You understand that part? So it's the same as CETA. CETA is supposed to do that on your behalf. You understand that part? In other words, even outsourcing or getting the people who are supposed to be doing that particular job for you. You understand that? Because I wanted us to be on the same page, Chairperson, so that at the end of the day, I don't have my own understanding and my own thinking. Gandhi, you have a different thinking altogether. I think from last year we were dealing with this. We had a problem with Kitting and the FDA, wasn't it? We had a problem with Kitting, and it's good, and I must congratulate you that we're getting somewhere because we are interested in consequences. We want to make, we want you to know and you inculcate the culture of knowing that this is not your funds, it's government's funds. People pay taxes. And it's difficult now. Even I was meeting some people at SARS to actually go and get tax from other people. Because people are saying, why should I pay tax when we are playing with people's monies like this? So I need to understand from SAPS. Since you understand that you took you knew the services, what CETA's services were. I mean, I know that the capacity, it's not that we had a problem with capacity from CETA for a long time. But what made you to actually come up with the name of FDA?
Why, Comrade Kuno, maybe let's do this. Remember that the police were also doing their own investigation from their side.
Okay.
They still owe us a report like this one.
Oh, okay. So we're still going to have a chance.
We'll still have a chance with the police to talk about
these
very issues from their side now, because
CETA
was investigated from their own side.
Thanks, Chairperson. No, that's fine. I think we'll have to wait for that, and I'm hoping that it's going to happen as soon as possible.
Sure.
But who's here from National Treasury? I thought Soli was here earlier on. I wanted to ask an advice, but maybe people from Auditor General can also advise. If a contract was obtained, irregular or not in the right way, and you want to seize the contract, maybe the contract is 6 months, and you seize it in the middle of 6 months, and then after 3 months, you find that there were irregularities with the project. Is CETA, can CETA stand on its own leg and say, this was done fraudulently, so that's why we're stopping it? I'll explain later why I'm asking that.
Okay, in word of advice, fraudulent contract, can we stop it the moment we discover it?
through you, Chair, I just want to check something. The fraudulent activities, are they those ones that took place from the supplier side or from within CETA side? Oh, okay. Because I think there are some few prescripts and requirements from the National Treasury regulations that give that allowance. If, for instance, a supplier has falsified information or misrepresented certain information, where a contract can't be cancelled. So there are some few requirements that allow such from an entity's point of view.
Thank you very much. With that explanation, and you have said in your presentation that you have paid a lot of money litigation, in terms of litigation, why don't you use the treasury regulations that are there, that are actually stipulating that this was done, or they got this contract unlawfully, so therefore we're stopping it on that? Because, I mean, for you to be dragging and dragging when the treasury regulations are clear, I don't understand, and I need to know how much have you paid in terms of litigation to deal with that matter, the matter that is, you know, in black and white. It's a different story when any matter is really silent and you don't know how to pronounce yourself. But this one is clear. So how much have you paid in litigation in terms of this?
If I could just ask the head of legal to just answer the second part. And actually in the first part as well. Thanks.
Thanks very much. I think what we need to remember is that though treasury regulations, TFMA, are there to be complied with, but once a state organ take a decision, it becomes an administrative decision. Once you've made an administrative decision, by law, you cannot just cancel it at whim. What you need to do, you become what we call a sanctus officio, meaning that you cannot reverse your own administrative decision. It needs to be done through a court of law. Only a court of law can determine whether a contract, in fact, it's the court of law that can only determine whether the contract is unlawful or not. So what we did, just to give you an example, we did cancel the agreement with FDA, the Rosin contract. They took us to court. We are defending that to say that we were within our right. But be that as it may, all contracts that you've got with any service providers, if you want them to be declared unlawful, it's only the court of law that can do so. So that is why we took the path of saying that in order to do it right, because we are dealing with a service provider that is not going to take it lying. We're not going to just send a letter of cancellation and they're going to accept it. They're not going to accept it. So the only way of dealing with this is to make sure that you've got the proper you do it via the right processes, and you've got court order to do so. And once you have got the court order and set aside all these contracts, then at least you will be in a position to say, now, let us issue summons because the court has already declared that this contract is legal. Then you can be able to recoup all the money that has been spent.
How much money has been spent in litigation so far?
So far, since last year, I think we've spent around about 3.5 million rand in litigation on this FTA.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, and I think I agree with it, but there's a first line that you started with that PFMA says this, but you, as a state entity, you can... What did you say exactly? I need you to go through that again.
Okay. It was just a general principle to say, once you have issued a letter of award...
Start where you started. You said PFMA is clear on that, but you, as a public entity, you can do... I wanted to understand that part and ask you, where do you take that? Because if PFMA is clear, why is it not applying to you as a public entity? I want to understand that part. I've understood everything that you said, and I agree with the fact that it has to go to court. But I just want to understand that part.
No, it does apply to all the state entity. It is just that the process in which you go about in terms of termination and cancellation might be a court process that you need to follow.
Thanks for that. And congratulations to actually come to a point where people were sentenced and all that, but also Chairperson, the renewal of contracts in an unlawful way is also a problem. I was googling Rofin earlier on, and it's a camera company that is based in USA, not even in South Africa. And I don't know how long are we going to talk about this, when is it going to come to an end. But what I want to find out before I can proceed with my questions to the CEO, how many people are in your office, your office as a CEO, how many people are in your office in terms of advising? If you have seven, maybe you have a PA, but how many people are there?
I don't have a CEO's office now. We just changed our structure so that I work through the executive team, the executive committee.
Meaning the board?
No, the executive committee. For example, the CFO, the head of risk, the head of internal audit, supply chain, legal, who sit on our executive committee, and the technical executives as well.
Thanks. Chairperson, the reason why I was asking that, you know, a contract can have irregularities and all, we can say it, everything that you've said. But at the end of the day, the signature, the one who signs at the end, it's you, I guess. So it came from SCM with all those irregularities and the executive. That it has. I don't know how it comes. Maybe you should explain that process to us. And then when it came to you, you signed without applying your mind. You know, the renewing of contracts, knowing exactly that they were not supposed to be renewed, FDA was forced into you by SAPS, and you knew that they were not doing what they were supposed to be doing. That's why in December they were actually holding the state at ransom and say, we're going to withdraw our system because they know that we depend on them, which is not what's happening in CETA only. But in most cases in the departments, there are people who are saying, you know, keep boss, and now without me, you can't do anything, can't surpass me, and I'm going to make sure that you pay for that. I'm asking you and your executives that how does the process start from SCM to you signing at the end? Why are they not charged? Because I think it's not them only who are at fault. But also the person who signs at the bottom, at the end, is also supposed to, take the blame. And I want to know what happened to them and the ill-advised. If they're still there, why? Why do you still have them if they can't advise you properly?
Thanks very much for that. The absolutely right, accountability goes all the way and applies to everybody. And including the resulting consequence management ought to apply to everybody. And I'm subject to that as much as everybody else. And the authority that is should and ought to subject me is the board. And I have no doubt that if the board felt that I had not done my job, that the board would subject me to the same and fair treatment. Or same treatment as other employees. I probably didn't mention here, there has been consequent management in respect of these irregularities at executive level, through one of the executives that was that I would depend on ordinarily for advice and execution of company policy. And that executive is no longer with the organization, has left. And that is since the last time we came here. What we do is, in that management structure that we have, we make sure that we apply principles of fairness and that we submit what we do in that disciplinary structure to the audit committee, for the audit committee to make sure that we are not in any way abusing the powers that we have been given by the board as executive members. We are working, though, on an acceptance that we came into this environment with a task by the board to clean the environment, and that we expect to find wrong things, and we are expected to then treat those wrong things. That we can expect, or we should be very, very vigilant about the information that comes our way. But we also accept that it's a risk environment. People can lie to you. People lie to us all the time. It's very difficult I can get a document that says exclusivity. Later on, I find in your computer that you just probably forged that document. At the point when you give it to me and you sign off, as a person that is submitting the business case, I place reliance on you. The reason why we instituted a full scan of SCM was based on the fact that we do combine assurance. As management, I have a duty to the audit committee to use the reports from risk, to use reports from external auditors, and to use reports from internal audit, and identify weaknesses in controls, and also identify so that's what I did.
Okay.
And I acted on that.
All right.
And in the meantime, things are not as thin as I would like them to be.
Okay.
So you do agree that there was a lot of ignorance as far as management is concerned, and you are taking blame for that. Who's from the internal audit?
I'm acting executive internal audit, Mimi Leru.
How long has you been there?
I joined CETA in March 2017.
When this contract came to you, I get your job is to actually make sure that you show the management this is risky, this was not done properly, these are the things that should be done in terms of you advising them. Did you do that? Do you have those letters that you have given to management? And irrespective of the advice that you have given them, they surpassed it and signed in contracts that they were not supposed to sign?
So some of the contracts had been in place for a long time, but certainly on the extensions of SBS, for instance, there was an internal audit report. So all transactions above 10 million get subjected to internal audit, and that was part also of the Bowman's investigation to see whether the internal audit report was done appropriately and whether that advice had been followed. The conclusion was that some of the conditions that were raised by internal audit hadn't been fully met in terms of the evaluation of price, but that was, again, to the CEO's point, a misrepresentation by management. By the people internal to CETA, who we have now been charging in a disciplinary hearing. So the internal controls had worked, but the misrepresentation resulted in that approval being granted.
Chairperson, the other question that I wanted to ask from management side now, with the people that you have listed in Annexure B, or is it Annexure A, where you have dismissed or who have resigned, is management part of that, or is it only your middle management?
This management is included in
that. I wanted to hear that. Now I'm glad, and I really want to congratulate you. If you have done that, then it means you are in the right path. But in page 9 of Bowman's thing, you said there was a perpetual contract, original license for 4 years. How much was that license? Page 9A. Yeah, Bowman.
We've just listed there that on page 8, we saw that the original appointment was done in 2003, and we saw 252 million rand of expenditure on that. which also includes then the, that was over the 13-year period, which includes maintenance and then licenses. But the license amount itself was 92 million rand. Yeah. That is, so what happens is that you pay 92 million rand because you are doing on a perpetual, and then you have a perpetual right to use. And there was no then claim or charges for licenses thereafter. These things then come only later when they change their business model.
The legal advisor is listening, and as we're trying to get back, that was what did Tim say, taking back the money from the state, you'll find a way of getting this 92 million, and you will come to us, ESCOP, and tell us what have you done in terms of seizing, because at the end of the day, you know the legislation that you have signed, you are going to be accountable. They will take everything that you own from the Auditor General side. They'll take everything that you own, including your houses, if you just keep on signing for things that are wrong. But you said that FDA's personnel, some of them were working for CETA. If you can give us a list of the personnel of FDA that were working for CETA, and from those who are still... if you can also tell us the people who are still working for CETA, but they are also personnel, yeah, FDA. Yes, if you could have that. I don't know if you have it now, but if you could have that. But the last question that I wanted to ask for now, Chairperson, is those who have resigned as you were investigating, where are they? Are they still, thank you very much, are they still employed by any entity of government, or are they still working for government? And the investigations, when did they start, and when did you start acting on those investigations? I just want to check your dates of dismissals and resignations as opposed to the investigations as they started, if they really correlate.
Just the first part, the original investigation started in 2016, and those are in the ACM area. That's about February 2016, and the people started leaving from June. That is now on Annex B of the ACM tab. June of 2016. I'm not aware of, well, I'm aware of one person that worked for government, local ministry, metro, and I'm not sure where he works now, because there was an inquiry on us. There is one person that I understand, but I haven't seen the documentation, who's trying to get a job in the state, but then there's also an inquiry on us. The rest, I don't know whether they work, where they or whether they work.
Did you tell the truth about this person when inquiry was made to you?
The one in the metro, yes.
And the other one?
The other one, the IOS said, I haven't seen the document. I'm only going to see it when I get back.
I just
learned yesterday. Oh. I just don't want to for me to be here, and then I've learned something, but I haven't.
No, that's fine. Because the question is linked to that part. If they went to a metro and there was inquiry as the previous employer, were you able to give the facts as they are? Otherwise, that person will move from CETA and then get employment somewhere with your connivance. I'll say connivance, because if you told them this is how the person left us, then those people will know it's a risk to employ such a person. All right?
When you apply for any job in government, there's that section where they ask you, have you ever been dismissed, or have you ever defrauded or something, the state? And people answer, and obviously because you have written CETA there, they will phone CETA and check if you know Thapelo Shilane. If you're not Thapelo Shilane, and then that's when you can actually say, this is what Thapelo Shilane did, once you are still in the under the employ of CETA. So that's what I'm saying. We need to be practical. When you say they have to be blacklisted, we need to be practical about it.
All right. Comrade Shulani.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have much of the question. I think colleagues have already asked. But I just wanted to check with the CEO, how many investigations do you have in the agency? And maybe probably the ones that have been concluded and the ones that are still pending.
In terms of the number of cases, we don't have any more. What is now left as per the documents here is just the disciplinary hearings that are mentioned. I think Funduzi is just mentioning about the two disciplinary hearings that are pending. And then Bauman, there's almost nothing left in there. And then there are no other investigations at the moment. We're just doing the normal, though, internal audit work when things arise. And I must say, things do arise, so it's not quiet there.
Okay. And in terms of this report, the Bauman's report, have you, in terms of these disciplinary measures, have you started implementing all the recommendations as concerned? And what is your possible time frame that you've put for yourself to be able to implement all these recommendations?
Thanks very much. It's I think the time frame, it's probably a dynamic system, because, for example, conflict of declarations of interest and conflict of interest management, we have implemented those things. But the minute you close this loop here, you open another loop. I think the more what comes out of here for us quite importantly is the need to have active combined assurance between risk, then internal audit, and then management, with very, very robust and strong oversight by audit committee. That is something that is happening quite a lot right now. I'm coming out of here. But as I said, it's a very, very dynamic situation around CETA. People are always trying to find their way, and the wake up call here is for us to be forever vigilant about our things.
Just for your permission, maybe on a lighter note, on what the CEO is saying. So currently, even if we are busy here, all the thieves, like the president said, people are thieves. All the thieves, they'll be watching this proceeding, and they'll find some new ways on how to milk the government coffers. That's what you are saying. And that's what you are saying, CEO?
They are always trying, ma'am.
And Chairperson, on that note, I don't know how to put it. I'm glad because IPT is here and SAPS is here. For them to be able really to close the gaps, because I'm sure we all know that people who are stealing, they'll always find new ways to steal. So that cases that are on investigation or cases that are on before them, they should be concluded. You know, for me, Chairperson, I'll be happy if one day I can hear that somebody's name who was mentioned in our committee specifically is being arrested and we see that person on TV. I think that will be a breakthrough for the country, Chairperson. So I just wanted to state that one. And on this issue of the investigations, the last time we're having meeting, the CEO was reporting that there were threats in terms of these investigations that are happening. What is the situation now?
No, I mean I haven't received any personally lately. That's all I can say.
And then let's go back then to this report. If we can go to page 12. I think it's item number 5.4.
Yes.
That's why you talk about, you've listed about five of them, companies who have sent the restriction letters to the National Treasury. I think it's maybe in a better English for blacklisting.
Yes.
But you mentioned one company that this person was an employee of CETA. One question, all these other ones are just ordinary.
No, I was just giving an example of the type of work that they would do, but they are associated with CETA somehow.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, but the number four, Huitzimang Technologies, the person was employed.
Yes, it was owned by an employee.
So has he or she resigned, or are you still pursuing the...
No, she's gone. She resigned. So she abruptly... No, we actually effected dismissal because she resigned when we charged her. Then she did not resign with immediate effect. So therefore she was on effective notice period. So we held a... we asked her to come for a disciplinary hearing. She didn't show up. Then we proceeded with a disciplinary hearing.
Can we get her name?
Yes. I'll show you the name now. It's on the point, the SCM tab. The SCM tab. Okay. The page 27 of the SCM tab.
Okay.
The first person there.
Okay. Page 27. Okay. This tab is also mean. Yeah. Okay. And then can we establish how much did this company make out of CETA in terms of rents?
Okay. Out of the state as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
The transactions.
Yeah.
I don't have the number, but we can certainly send it.
You don't have the number?
Yeah, I don't have it with me now.
And then did you receive value for money in terms of the work that the company was doing?
So it was selling computers.
Okay.
But it was a manipulated market because it was on a three quotation basis, so she would choose which company she would send the quotations to. I mean, if the intention was for her company then to win, then you are probably going to send it to companies that are going to be your company is going to be able to compete with. So, I mean, in an environment like this, one can almost say that there is no value for money.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, CEO. And in terms of pension funds, did you recoup something out of it?
No. We haven't. As I mentioned earlier, we have not pursued any claims,
mm-hmm.
Which is a note that we have made, yes.
And she was dismissed last year in March.
Yes.
I don't think there's any money left that we'll get. And then, have you reported at the Public Service Commission?
No, I haven't.
I guess it's the same question that was asked by Honorable Kunu,
yes.
In terms of her pursuing some... Because we just need to set an example.
Yes.
We just need to set an example. And then, can we then go to... I think, CEO, when I'm speaking, just absolving her. It also relates to everybody else in the entire organization. Can you then go to this report?
Okay.
Maybe before I start, I just want to establish, do you have evergreen contracts?
We have been looking for them, and I don't think there are any. However, what is of worry for us is when they are in effect. So when there is request for renewals that go on and on and on. So the contract will be for 3 years, but it's 10 3 years. and then it has the effect of being evergreen. So that behavior, that conduct is still there. Remember.
It's there. Yeah, in terms of the finding, when you go to page 8 or slide 8, on the firearm permit system, there's a point here that you mentioning that the last bulletin, severe underutilization of the system.
Yes.
Can you please just bring us to the understanding of what does this point mean?
Yes. So we looked at the transactions on the system, and then we look at the size of the data in the system. Then we look at how many transactions ought to have been there, and how much data should have been there. And our view is that there are far too few transactions for the system, and there's far too little data compared to the data that ought to have been there. And so our view is that the system was underutilized for its purpose. And it is.
So in other words, it means that you just paid for services that were not used entirely. That's
yes,
it.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. And then can we go to okay, this one, I think I got it. Can you go to page 13? When you go to page 13, there's a, on ISS, EAA,
yes.
AMIS, when you go to, in terms of the irregular proceeding that happens, bulletin number 2,
yeah.
There were contract extensions 7 times since 2009. That is why I asked the issue of evergreen contract. Because I guess if it's from 2009, probably up to date or probably up to last year, and it was expanded over about 158%. Can we get an opportunity as a committee on what does this mean and how was it addressed?
Okay. So the what would normally happen there is this, most of them would be, for example, the first one is a 3-year period. Then people would then come and say they will ask for a few months of extension while they're thinking about alternative methods. And then that keeps going on and on and on and on and on. And then there's no evidence that any work gets done to look for alternatives. So on the last one, what happened there, you see that it's a 1-year contract. This is an answer that came to me for a 3-year extension, and I refused. And I said 1 year to Treasury, but with a commitment for somebody to sign that we are going to go to the market to look for alternatives, which we did in that year. And we found at least one alternative. As I said, it was a feasibility study of a market. It took a long time. Some of the people that ought to have done the work and didn't do the work are not at work right now. We've suspended them because then I had to find other ways of doing the work. Or we have to find another way of doing the work. We've since found that then we went into the broader markets on an RFI, and we found another 6 or 7 alternatives. So now we are going to go on to a request for bids. And if VAMS is still the one that provides value for money, then it will win, but it will have won under competitive processes. That's what should have happened a long time ago, and that's what has to happen across the board.
So this contract was not terminated. It's still on.
So no, it's not on. There's no contract now. We are using it under our own understanding that we have perpetual rights to it.
Okay. See, how many people are suspended currently?
Sure. I don't have a full number, ma'am. I can send it to you within you.
Okay.
In 48 hours.
Within 48 hours? Okay.
No, we have the number. I mean, it's very easy to get.
Okay. So this FDA contract, since it was terminated, you terminated it and then they took you to court. How long was it supposed to run?
So this one expired. Remember it was, so this one that you're looking at on page 12 was a one-year one. So it lapsed. The one that we canceled was supposed to go until 2019, the one that we canceled this year. Started in 2014.
Chairperson, I think for me, for now, thank you very much.
No, thanks, Chair. CEO, when you were making your presentation, I was tempted to congratulate you. But I immediately realized that unfortunately, it would be wrong for me to do that, you see, to congratulate or to praise the fish for swimming. Because immediately I thought, if we didn't raise these issues, would you have picked these issues? That's the question that I'm asking.
Okay. I think at the outset, I would like to thank you for assisting us. Thanks for this committee for the manner in which it has raised awareness, guided us, challenged us in the work that we're doing. We had been doing our investigations prior to coming here in December. On SCM in particular, we started those investigations in February. However, the kind of emphasis and guidance and thoroughness that the committee requested of us or provided to us and requested of us thereafter helped us quite a lot. So a number of things probably would not have gotten to the point where we have gotten to had it not been for the assistance of the committee.
Okay, let's go to substantive issues now. Let's start with the first one, the issue of your executive committee. Were they subjected to a vetting process? All
yes,
of them?
Yes.
If there's no one who is not vetted?
The submissions have been made, sir.
What does that mean?
Normally submissions are made to the vetting agency.
You have made submissions that they must be vetted?
No, the vetting submissions are made to the vetting agencies.
No, I mean, I want to understand what is submission.
Can I respond? So the vetting field work is done by the department reporting to myself. All executive members have submitted all their documentation. All the field work has been completed. It's with the SSA for clearance.
Right.
So CETA doesn't issue the final clearance.
Just wanted to understand that. That process. Yes, Comrade.
No, thank you. Let's go to page, which one? It's on page 3. I need clarity on this one, on this document. You are saying CETA does not discipline employees for lawful expansion or deviation. In an event where a deviation or an expansion leads to irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful expenditure, CETA will proceed with an inquiry against that particular employee. Just explain that to me because I don't understand.
So what it says is that expansion or deviations can be lawful in the sense that we apply to National Treasury for such.
I'm sure the first part of that sentence was totally unnecessary.
Perhaps.
To say you don't discipline people for lawful expansion and deviation.
We expect you to do that anyway.
Okay.
It's the last part that we want, that if it leads to irregular expenditure, then you do make follow-up. That's the part.
That's and the most important part is the second part, which is that if any deviation or anything that leads to irregular expenditure or fluctuations in expenditure, including deviations or expansions, then we discipline people, or we do an inquiry into it, and then we subject people accordingly.
Now, on the criminal matters, I think
just pull the mic towards you, comrade.
Yeah. On the criminal matters, I think my colleagues have dealt with the issue that we'll have to await, that is the courts. I'm not going to deal with that. And I think Tim also dealt with that issue, that what you then need to do as the accounting officer, you need to get feedback from time to time. Because we can't just wait for the court that is to finalize this. At times the court will throw the case out of court because of insufficient evidence. But if we are making that is follow-ups, you'd be in a position to assist even the investigating officer. That's the plea that is from our side. That please make follow-ups on these cases and give us feedback on the progress that is on these cases.
Okay.
There are two issues that I seem not to understand. I think it's on this report. Where you gave people final written warnings. But when I look at the transgressions, they are similar to the others, because I've been going through your list. Is there a specific reason that is for these two to be given that is final warnings? Let me quickly, this page 21. Yeah. I think that it's page 21. Yeah. The two final written warnings. Not in page 21. Yeah, but you know what I'm
saying. Yes.
Do you mind to give reasons? Because if you look at the transgressions, they are one and the same. Now, why are these getting that is final warnings and others are being dismissed?
It would be our dictionary system, it would be the chairperson of the disciplinary hearing would pronounce on those. And I don't have the details. I can probably give a summary of what the chairperson would have used to come to that.
Did you use different chairpersons or you had one
chairperson? No, different chairpersons. Different chairpersons.
No, I hear it. Because that is actually going to be my next question. And obviously, if you get a report, I take it that it's an external person. Obviously, if he or she gives you a report, he or she must take you through. Is that the case? Or he just provides a report to you and you accept the report?
No, well, our code says that the report is the chairperson's decision is final, but the employees can always appeal to the other structures of the organization.
I'm not disputing the part, but I'm saying here's Sakike Kana, who was entrusted with the responsibility of conducting a disciplinary hearing. He has concluded the disciplinary hearing. And Sakike Kana has made his finding. What is the process? Is Saki just going to give you the report without even going, that is giving you, that is the reasons? Because obviously at the end,
as the accounting officer, you need to own up that is to the report. It's your report now. Fati is not here. Now, that's the question that I'm asking. Is, do they give you the report and just walk away? Or they give you the report and take you through the report? That is on the merits of the case. I'm trying to talk about that, that is on the...
I mean, the report is processed by the organization, so they will be processed by us. And because our, for example, our IR function is always part of that process. And so we would be privy to the reasons